Well, I wanted to share just a few little incidental things or opening things. One is I found a copy of a more ancient Hebrew alphabet. You've got one, I think. And in it, it gives a 23rd letter, which right now we're called in the books, in most of the books I read, it calls the 23rd letter the missing letter. There's a lot of mystery around it. Some say that it is looks like a shin with one more arm, and that it is the representation of the female, whereas the shin is supposed to represent the male, but that's falling apart, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But anyway, this 23rd letter is called GAH, G-H-A-H, looks like DNA strand to me. Mm-hmm. G-H-A, this is the first time I've seen that. Yeah, you've got it on the back side. The letter looks like DNA, and the name, G-H-A-H, when I read that, I thought of Gaia, which is a term that some religions or belief systems call the earth. It calling her Gaia means that we recognize that she's a living organism. And I thought, how appropriate. She would be female because the Tav is male. So anyway, I thought those little things were interesting. In one of the, something I read, I was here and there and everywhere, but I did pretty much stick to a couple of references I'll give you so you'll know kind of where I'm coming from. Anyway, several of the references talked about how profound an alphabet is. And one said, like, in terms of everything that can be said about anything comes from our alphabet, and I'm going, well, you know, it's really, really phenomenal to realize how profound that is. Suzanne gave me a little book to look through. It's an agency that studies languages, and they have formulated many languages for indigenous people that didn't have an alphabet so that they could read and so they could write their own language, and most of the time the motive for that was so they could translate the Bible. You know, that was just a blessing, but I guess I hadn't just really focused on how fluid that a language can be to be able just to go into a small tribe and hear their spoken language and decide what type of language they need, whether pictorial or phonetical or whatever. But anyway, that was amazing to me. I thrilled over that two or three times. The Hebrew alphabet is phonetic. It's the first language that was phonetic. The Egyptian and the Sumerian had been cuneiform or hieroglyphic, which means that each little symbol, and the Chinese, I think, originally. Somebody correct me if I'm not, because I'm just kind of spitting out things right now. But anyway, they were all, they were symbols for things, you know, objects and however they symbolize things that aren't pictorial. Anyway, the best I could gather, the Hebrew is the first phonetic, a letter for each syllable. That's good. It refers, these two sources, Ask the Kabbalah, Deepak Chopra, with a Michael Zappelin did this one, and then this, and he's, of course, Deepak's Hindu. And the Oracle of the Kabbalah by Richard Seidman, he's Jewish. So it was two different perspectives, and I got more out of Deepak's this time than I had in reading him before. So I'll read a couple of things verbatim now there, just a couple, to kind of give you a feel for his. But anyway, they both... Pardon?
I'm sorry, what was Chopra's title?
Ask the Kabbalah.
Ask the
Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. In both of these, they named the Zephyr Yetzirah, which is the book of creation, they say Abraham wrote, and I'm going, good grief, that sounds wonderful, because Abraham's had so much to do with compiling and, for lack of a better term, publicizing this information. And the Zohar is referred to, it is a mystical interpretation of the Torah, probably by these Kabbalists. The Zephirot is that really schematic picture of the Tree of Life that we've seen its circles, and then each circle connects another circle pretty intricately. I meant to make a copy, I didn't, so moving right along. both of these books say that the Hebrews understand that the alphabet is black fire on white fire, and that there's as much in the space around the letter as there is in the black letter, which I really like. I didn't get much out of it, but some things I had already heard in the Mem, for example, this looks like a uterus, and the Mem is the water mother, which speaks, you know, she makes us think of the womb because it has water in it, and we, you know, life came out of the sea in God's order. So there you have it. The Zayin looks like a sword. I'm not very, the one on the wall looks more like a sword, you know, it's not very convincing, but the idea behind it will make it more real. Anyway, that's only two. Without really, there's another couple, but I won't go into it. The Hebrew word letter is ot. It is aleph, vav, tav. Aleph's the first letter. Vav is a connecting letter. It means as a prefix to a noun, it means and. Tav. So the very word letter means what? A alpha omega. It also means, this word ot means sign, miracle, wonder. The Hebrew letters are like archetypes in that each letter embodies the energy of a human nature or a human condition. Yes. That's just the way I saw it. I didn't see that anywhere written, but that's what it reminded me of. Expressing a specific primordial creative energy, a kind of pattern of the heavenlies. And the word abracadabra means I will create as I speak, and they said, two sources said that abracadabra, they say it differently, is Hebrew. So it's not like these guys didn't know that. I feel like as any language comes, that we delve into any language, we pick up and reunite with a lot of the deep spiritual aspects that don't come through in the letter. I think putting a language into letters decreases the value of that unspoken innuendo and spirit. One of Rokas's daughters told him that she had read that about 85% of our communication is nonverbal. I'm not sure, but I feel like a lot more than we know is nonverbal. So, that to me is the white fire. That to me would be the white fire as God speaks to you. As a matter of fact, in the ancient Hebrew letters had no consonants. The voice and the breath of man put those subtle sounds into the language. It gave diversity. It gave personableness to the language and your reading of it. It was more interactive and inspirited by the breath of man. I thought that was a pretty thought. I tried to think of a word that I could use in as an example, and shalom came to mind. It's written shin, lamed, mem. It's written this letter, and that letter. So that's shin, lamed, mem. And shalom comes out of that. So as I'm praising, I go shalom. The ah and om as vowels are universal sounds that connect the heavens. Don't know how to say that. Yeah. Anyway, I feel like God gave me that because it was the word that came to mind. Aleph is a first letter of the alphabet. Its value is one. Its basic, really condensed meaning is ox. And in that more ancient picture that I showed you with the brown strips of letters, the very first letter is looks like an ox head. And I don't know how, yeah. Just hold it up there, baby. Turn it back on the first page. Turn, you've got one. Everybody see that? Anyway, it did. In ancient, it looked like an ox head. The ox head means a primordial strength, you know, just a power of being. I'm a little suspicious it's related to it being the age of Taurus in the day that it was kind of formulated. And a little thing I found, I didn't bring because I just was going to say it. One of the little information pieces that I found said that if the ox was represented just the head within a circle, it was the Aleph, that all potential oneness of God. And if it was the whole body, then it pertained to a soul or more earthbound God. I thought that was good, however true it is. Aleph is one of the mother letters. She is air. And I found that listed in several places where it's female. I found one place that said it was male, but that's really messed up the whole alphabet because that made all the mother letters male. So I believe that Aleph is female, although ox just does not sound very female. And, of course, in the Aleph, there's all potential. There's mother, father, sister, brother, cousin, you know, just all potential, all relationships.
Well, remember Rudy teaching us on this, kind of he laid a foundation for us because he had that dream. And in the dream, he was taken into the heavens, and every Hebrew letter was a huge building. And then somehow we came across this Kabbalah. It just opened up a new world for me. Because it's once you get into one word, it's vast. Yeah. There's no end to the study.
It's true. It's true, yeah. Abraham, our father of faith, when God called him out of Ur in Genesis 12, it says, God calls Abraham to go forth or go toward himself. Somebody shared that. Was it Rokas? Someone has said that recently, and that just means the world. That our journey, the scriptures record for us this journey of moving toward our true selves. And the Aleph has that embodied in it as a, this is where we're going, the all potential. Abraham was the father of monotheism. He sought the city whose builder and maker was God, and did not attain, but he made us a gateway. And it is our privilege, I believe, in this day to attain.
And to show it to him. He's waiting for us to show it.
Exactly. That's a good way to say it. Other meanings of Aleph are leader and chieftain. It's the chief of the letters. It means the value. It means God is one. Aleph is related to Aleph, which is starts with an E, which is a thousand or innumerable quality. Aleph embodies both unity and multiplicity in prime factors of creation, leading other letters as they combine to form the universe. And that always puzzled me, and this thought of I wanted to read just one little word I found. This was from a little site called HebrewLetters.com, and it was mostly names. It just had list after list after list of Hebrew names, and then you could click on the name and it'd show you how it was written and really break it down a lot. And it said about Aleph, the Lord said to her, although I will begin the creation of the world with Bet, thou will remain the first of letters. My unity shall not be expressed except through thee. On thee shall be based all calculations and operations of the world. Well, duh. You know, you start with one. But anyway, I thought it was pretty good. Aleph begins many names of God. Eloah, El, Al, Adonai, Elohim. And the Elohim ends in I am, which makes it plural. When you see the I am on the end of a word, it makes it plural. So that suggests that the one God includes many spirits and divine forces. We know that. God is not a man. Nowhere localized. Science is so proving that. It just is. And for us to begin to have that as a concept rather than always when we say God or Father, picturing, I do it automatically. It's just there in my thoughts to picture, however vaguely, a man, or at least some distance between that thing I'm speaking to, and that's something that God is healing. Aleph also begins another name of God, the Ein Sof, which means without end. The word is related to, Ein Sof is related to the letter Ein. Where are you?
Number 70.
Right here. Means nothingness, which, you know, I hear that, but I can't relate to that very much. It's just when I think of that allness, I think of just allness, and I can't get emptiness out of that. Maybe somewhere down the line again. Aleph is formed. And this is another thing I really, in this study, realized more than ever. I had seen it and really recognized it, but I hadn't had anybody confirm it to me, don't think. Most of the letters are formed from other pieces of letters, and the ones that are most predominant are so wonderful. I'm going to break from the ABC when I get so far and cover a couple of the letters that are so profound like that. So, the Aleph is formed from a Vav right here, and here it is. Yud, which is high flying, it's not on the ground. A yud here, and then one touching, and then the vav, which connects. This is an and, or a very, very connecting letter, and that forms this V first, just as a demonstration of how all inclusive God is. John Wheeler wrote a book, and he explains the phenomenon of the observer effect, which says that in reality and by experiment, science has discovered that just the observation, just a person observing an experiment, alters the outcome. To me, that is beautiful to know that God is so inclusive that everything we do reverberates with everything else. I started to say with Him, but you know, we're trying not to narrow it down.
For observing it causes it to be changed.
Yeah, John, do you have a good example or experiment where that was demonstrated?
There's a I don't remember the reference. There's a book that was written that talks about experiments that were designed to see whether the actual observation affects the result. It was one of the earlier books I read during the last year or so. And there are several experiments that show that you cannot observe something. If you observe something, the very fact of your observing is likely to affect whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The references are in the book called The Field. If you read the first few chapters, there are references, and in those first two or three chapters that have references to those kinds of experiments.
Mm-hmm. How many times have you been observing someone and then all of a sudden trying to look you straight in the
eye? Yeah.
I mean, over and over again.
Yeah. That's a good example. So that is proof text for the power in language. The essence of Aleph is contemplative, creative, omniscient, and its sound is silent. And that just gets me to realize that our scripture in Genesis starts with the bet, because the Aleph is the field out of which all the others and itself are recognized. Second letter is Beit. It is male. It means house or house of. Its value is two, which to me immediately brought the idea of the division that goes on right early in the scriptures. God created the heavens and the earth, and then then the water, then the stars, then the sky, and just division. As a demonstration of the fullness of God in a form that can be distinguished from the other forms, it had to come out and be divided. Rokas uses this illustration a lot. Out of the oneness, God desired to know Himself, mm-hmm. and so began to show Himself in division. And then, after that is, for lack of a better term, done, we return in knowledge and in spirit to that one.
One obvious point to me was realizing, for instance, that we are full party. If we separated ourselves, we can look at this part now. Mind, will, emotions, desires. You know, there's a separation there. If we could see each part of that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what God's doing, I guess, or showing us. That's why the importance of those separations.
Exactly.
We could see each part of Himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
I think Ezekiel does the same thing. Illustrating as Khan taught the last few lessons. In Ezekiel, we're looking at the four parts and their various emanations, which again is describing what Steve just said. And what you just said, out of the whole comes the division so that we can look at. It's difficult for us to see everything, but if you take it apart from me one at a time, then I gain understanding and I can share that maybe.
Yeah. And it's God's delight to give us the equipment with which to do that.
And maybe, so if there was one and then there were two, that creates division. So combining that with what Steve was saying, if in our division we observe somebody else, and knowing that as we observe we are affecting that other person, as he said by example, then for what purpose do we observe? And if the purpose is to observe the restriction that the other one is emanating, the constraint that the other one is emanating, then you are seeing a fragment, not the whole. If, on the other hand, the reason for your observation is to see the richness brought, that's just the phrase I'm using, the richness brought by that division in order to display the whole, you are seeing both the richness of the individual and the richness of that individual in the whole. So you're seeing a pluralistic world, if you will, not dualistic, but a pluralistic world that amplifies the value of the individual in its context of the whole.
Yeah. That's pretty. I want to look right quick and see if I... When we were talking, I thought of reading in this Oracle of Kabbalah. If I can turn right to it, I will. If I can, I'll just drop it, but... Oh, I can't that quick. Anyway, there's in one of the letters, descriptively, it said to be careful how you look, how you speak to someone, how you look at someone. Make sure it's not with an evil eye. That's exactly what John was saying. We affect when we do that. God, I'm leaving.
Well, one of the problems is that. So if you really think about what's actually being said, I can't. And it's the one where it says, these six things does God love and this one he hates or whatever. One of them is that he hates the downcast eye looking upon another, elevating yourself and seeing someone else as lower.
Yes.
And what's interesting to me is that that is separated out from the list as if to say, this is one of the most despicable things.
Yes.
In God's heart, to put yourself above someone else and assume you're looking at them, that's despicable. And that's that evil eye, perhaps, that we're addressing, and what the Kabbalah is saying, be careful how you look.
Yes.
Because it's all, God looks with the eyes of love,
yes, he
always
does.
And what isn't that, he despises.
Yes. Well, that's beautiful.
I saw something yesterday on the internet. So strange. Y'all brought this up. And it kind of affected me when I read it. There was a flight, people on flight, and the woman did not want to sit next to a black man. And she raised hell about it. So, and they do not, there's no other available seats in the economy. So she checked with first class, and then she pushed her to go to the captain. Well, the captain, there was only one seat left in first class, so she told her about it. I mean, she made a big stink out of this. I mean, it was just obvious, and she explained it to her, and next thing you know, they're moving the black man to the first class.
Oh, right.
Yeah, away from her.
Yes.
And everybody on the flight was laughing because that's the right thing to do.
Yes.
She, what's wrong with people? Mm-hmm. You know, but I was like, oh my God, that was so awesome what they did.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It was awesome. There's no Solomon there.
Yeah, they
are.
Yeah.
But stop here.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I was just thinking of the scripture, let your eye be single. You need to have a single eye.
Yeah, that's true.
And that single eye is that light. We are light and we are darkness. We have both of those within us. And so let our eye be single. Let that light so shine on others that you may reveal that which is light and life. You know, that brings it out in each other. If our eye is single and full of light, then we have the ability to bring that forth in each other.
To share that. Yeah, it's beautiful.
I think it's so important in the way we look at anyone to appear at least approachable.
Mm-hmm.
If the person has a stern, hard look, I'm not going to approach them. I don't care what they say.
Right. Yeah.
Because I know by the spirit that's coming out of their eyes that they're not of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would we do that? So I think that's the Father showing us we need to be, we're not a mountain that cannot be approached.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's an old axiom that says beauty's in the eye of the beholder, so that kind of tells you. Each individual sees something different.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you what you see.
Yeah, it is. It's within us.
But I can guarantee you that in experiments, unless there is some sort of guided system outside of one individual, then there is influence in it, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
That's, there is. There will be, and always has been, and always will be. But those, in real experiments, they built those buildings on the end. They know that.
Is that what they call the factor of error or something like that? the Tower of Babel, the languages were divided and the people were scattered. And that was another place where I thought of how much we, humanity, lost in the intuitive and extrasensory connection to our fellow man. Okay. One of the ways that probably Seidman suggests that we can feel at home in our house is because there's so much of a feeling of disconnect. He said, just breathe into our bellies, care for ourselves, and let ourselves relax into who we are as we know that. Maintain an attitude of blessing, because that's one of the words that is blessing or blessed. That is open to the future. It's turned to the that way, to the right, because it is like a new adventure coming out of God to be discovered. Okay. The Gemel is the next letter. Its value is 3, and it is like a picture of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Nobody has to agree with that. That just kind of came to me. I think it was somewhat confirmed, but I wouldn't argue it. Like a 3-legged stool, which is very stable. The Talmud teaching says that the world stands on 3 foundations, the Torah, prayer, and deeds of loving kindness. That's the single word defining Gimel is camel, who's a sturdy animal that can nourish itself even in the arid desert, can provide for itself longer and others longer than most animals can survive in those circumstances. The
male or female,
they go alternately. Y'all got a little list, so if you just start Aleph with female, then you can tell. I'll try to name it too, because I do want to do that. Keep them, make us mindful of that.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Other than sequence, do the numbers value mean anything else?
Yeah, you see how it goes from 1 to 10, Johnny, and then starts 20, 30, 40, 50, and then when it gets to 100, 200, 300, 400, I'm assuming the missing letter would be 500. And
is that an American system? Or is it just the way the letters are put in there, and then they power is after 10 is 20? Or do they have a symbolism?
It is very much so. I don't know much about the numerology. Let me think if I can pick one out to demonstrate. I will, as a teacher. I've got one that's really geared toward the number. Yeah. Well, noon 50 for me is one of the best ones. The noon means fish, but 50 is the number of Jubilee in the scriptures, which just blows it out of the water for me. Jubilee is such a tremendous reality. Jubilee is when is every, in the 49th year, everybody who had to sell land, their homeland, their inherited land for whatever reason, could they gain their land back. Slaves went free.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, that's
just. I see that with it looks like none, which is fish, which is Christian, which may be the reason why that was big word was big for none. I don't know. I mean, I'm just in my mind. I'm trying to figure out, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I figured it had something to, you know, some sort of specific meaning somewhere or something.
Lynn does really well with that, and noon in your little graph of the older letters looks just like the spermatozoa, which is, you know, that's what noon means, fish, which are prolific and multiply quickly and are, you know, abundant for nourishment and everything. So when I saw that little squiggly thing, that's what I thought of, just real, you know, life-giving, life thing. It is, you can look at it. So, in the Gemel, we have the opportunity to see our true wealth in that we are have been given, we are equipped through the Aleph, and it's in our home to be self-sufficient, self-nourishing, and also giving to others. Gemel calls to us to honor the wealth that arises when we let everything go, our attachments to ideas, our ideas about God, people, self-concepts, and self-interest, and just relax ourselves into the inner knowing that we are equipped. Comes through revelation and looking into it. Another little thing I found out is camels ruminate like a cow, so they have the capacity to really be meditative, and not camel, but for our understanding of what God means by gemel, we have that capacity to turn things over in our mind and make it milk or meat. Camels are edible, so one source said. What did you say?
So they chew the
cud. They do.
Well, you can see
them,
that
they're all out. Yeah. Yeah. And Gemel has two M's in it. M is the water mother in the alphabet, and so you can see how nourishing and provisional this letter intends. It is also made of a some other letters. I'm not going to get into it because I'm not sure enough. But anyway, it is. The Dalit is male. It's the value of four. Its most basic meaning means door. It also means doorway, entrance, threshold, and open doorway. I think the letter demonstrates pretty well that it's intended to have an idea of an open letter because it's open again to the light, which is outward, the communication of ourselves with others. It also suggests that a person doubled over while carrying a heavy load, a poor person begging alms. The poor person, it says specifically in two or three places, that this the Dalit is seen as a poor person to whom the Gemmel is rushing. See this outstretched foot rushing to aid. You know, I had various thoughts about that. It's almost like this is the God's demonstration that our natures have the capacity to fall and to be not be humbled, but be humbled by our circumstances, but with aid and a fix for it.
The beggar carrying the load.
Exactly, that's a good word for it.
The right order is then Gemmel rushes to the aid to help him because straight is the gate and narrow is the way. And the only way he can get in is to get down and crawl and carry his load.
Oh, that's pretty. Yeah, that's good. okay. In the book by Chopra, he just did such a good job, I feel. He used the scripture. Hold on. Genesis 2, 18, 21 through 24, where Adam names all the animals, and then God puts him into a deep sleep, and out of the man forms that woman. And when he sees her, he says, now this is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, because he didn't know what to call this one. That was cute. And in a better translation, the helpmeet is called helper, one corresponding to him or one opposing him. That does not mean him. And nobody's going to believe this. But nobody, that doesn't mean war. We assume it does, but it's not. It's such a complementary issue, and the matter of Gemmel being female rushing to the male, and these mean typed as, to me, typed as Adam and Eve. She came out of him, but he did not recognize her as something he needed. He could not see himself in her. He perceived her as separate from himself.
It would be great if we could, in our relationships with other people, see their opposing view as complementary.
Would you say that again?
It would be great in our relationships with other people if we could see their opposing views or seemingly opposing views as complementary instead. Another way of looking at something.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. That's what God is bringing us to in this day. And there's always been an element of it, but hey, the earth's been divided for a long, long time. So that's beautiful, Karen. I like that a lot. Jesus demonstrated a feminine aspect in his ministry, for he was subject to the Father. And So that's all I've got to say about that, I guess. He is our next letter. It is the fifth letter. It is one of the only two broken letters, two separate parts in the alphabet. Its basic meaning is window. Did I say it was feminine? It is the letter most often linked to God's name, that Yod-Heh, Vav-Heh, and just several others. Its sound is the merest breath or whisper. As a suffix at the end of a letter, hey denotes the feminine form of any noun. So when Abraham and Sarah were getting ready to be blessed and made productive by God, he added an H to both their names. The brokenness is, like Connie said, it is our brokenness allows us to be receptive, and that was talked about a little bit in something I read, that this open bottom here allows an exit from the things of God. Take that broad way if you must, and the straight and narrow way back in. So I like that little demonstration. Amid the tumult and clamor of life and living, Hay's voice quietly breathes in a mere whisper. Let brokenness of life experience inform our wholeness. Don't stay broken and don't assume that's God's order, but let it. Let it help us return to a wholeness and find out what that means. In Chopra's explanation, he uses the scripture where Moses is in the wilderness and he sees the bush and he turns to observe, and God speaks to Moses twice, Moses, Moses, and Moses says, "Here I am," which is a word, I don't know how to pronounce it, Hainini or something, which means "here I am." It has begins with an H. Moses was blessed in that because he gave attention to that. God used him and ordered him by his attention. And as a prefix, "hey" stands for the definite article, "the." Pay attention to the specifics of your life, and like, hey, what's going on here? Hey, why am I angry? Hey, what did you mean by that? Or, hey, can I help you? Just, you know, it's beautifully demonstrative of just a way to order ourselves, as all these letters are.
Exactly. Pay attention to this. It's like, you know, someone brought out that Moses turned aside to see that bush, for which he would have seen it, had he not turned aside that was burning. But he would have had to turn, that's one too, put it from there. Yeah, turn aside to see it.
He did. We have to
be in those buildings.
He couldn't take his eyes off of it because it was a bush that was not consumed. The bush on the desert they were consumed were all the time. But this bush was so green and leafy, it was not consumed. So God spoke that with the body of Christ down through the ages that he was beholding. You're standing on holy ground here. You're looking at the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So it captivated him. Because it wouldn't die.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be in the burn.
I read somewhere in this that that site where Moses encountered the burning bush was the same site where Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac, and also where the Ten Commandments, Mount Sinai, where it was given. So I'm going, that's good.
Definitely holy ground.
Yeah. the number five is the number of grace. It's 3 plus 2. Here's the 3. And here's the 2 male and female, the best I can do with it. I know it's huge, but 1, didn't have time, and 2, I just, you know, don't do as well with the numbers as other things. The next letter is Vav. Beautiful. Love it. No, it's, yes it is. I went that far. It's basic, most basic meaning is hook. It's lost a little bit in translation. On the little sheet I gave you of the more ancient one, it's got, it looks like a two-tined fork, sort of. And the first picture I got was of the mechanism on an aircraft carrier to catch those planes when they come roaring onto that deck. Yeah. It looks like a hook. And boy, it just set me up to be all thrilled with that picture in my mind. Its value is 6. Its sound is B. And maybe another letter. Maybe it can sound like B sometimes. As a prefix to a noun, Vav means and. So that's the hook part. Just hook this part to this part. Tremendous. But even a more tremendous understanding is, as a prefix to a verb, Vav changes the tense of the verb from past to future, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I'm going. Vav inverts time, connecting and transmuting or transforming past and future. In Joel, the 2nd chapter, the 25th verse, it said, God tells Israel, I will restore the years. That the locust has eaten. And I saw that for every one of us. Any situation, any memory that you have that drags you down or makes your guts drop or you know, feels like a stumbling block to you, visit that place. And know that God transmutes by His very nature. God is the past, the present, and future dwells in God. So it's like we've been talking about. We can change the outcome of the situation by observing it. So that is thrilling to me. It's a disease of our day to feel disconnected and separate from ourselves, from God, from our community. Just so much closeness in our being that God desires to open. By our very design, the power of connection is deeply built into the very structure of nature. This is, I'm quoting a little when I say, the disconnect with the male transcendent and the male immanent nature of God have been driven into exile. The male and the female, the transcendent and the immanent, were driven into exile. So I thought I knew what that meant until I looked up these words. The females call the Shekinah glory. But it's called here, I'll give it a minute, it's called here the immanent. Okay, immanent means existing or remaining within, inherent. Another meaning, restricted entirely to the mind, and subjective. Subjective means it's what, how you interpret within you, what's going on inside of you, and not taking into account what is factual outside. Not necessarily bad, but that's the meaning of it. I didn't know that. So that's the, this is in exile. The transcendent is the way it's spelled, T-R-A-N-S-E-U-N-T. It means, in philosophy, it means the productive, it means productive of effects outside the mind, going over, or it does mean transient, and that's what I thought, the transient, temporary, momentary thing, but it's deeply, more deeply, it means productive of effects outside the mind. Some synonyms for transient is ephemeral, evanescent, well, those two are enough.
Was that like passing into the future?
It,
you're looking beyond the present moment?
Uh-huh. It's like being able to the internalization by the female of the facts of life, the workings, the detail, the things that are fleeting and momentary, that we let slide. No, like God just says a little whisper.
Is that like forgetting those things which are behind, pressing forward the mark? Is that that kind of thing?
That fits with me. I told myself when I wrote this that I would throw this out here and somebody would go, oh, yeah. So if anybody sees it better than I do, I don't really see exactly. In fact, if I had to describe it, I would say that the woman's nature was more transient, which is productive effects outside the mind, because she's described as the Shekinah glory. And the man would be the immanent thing that, you know, a man inherently has a mind for detail and facts. So anyway, I do not understand
the
just
stability for like the moon and the male, the stability brings forth that strength and stability that the woman cannot. She's,
well, you know, I guess I just don't have a good enough picture of male and female to say, because right now our focus has been so much on the part of the woman being reintroduced and being so, so much what the male needs right here with Gimel and Dalit. It's the female Gimel rushing to the Dalit, female male, to nurture and to encourage. But there's, it's an exile, this understanding, I guess, but it's exciting to me to know that God is repairing that. One of the words that they used in describing the function of the Vav as a unifier is to say Vav forwards the process of tikkun, which is repair. Vav embraces opposites, this and that are good. It gathers the sparks of the divine light from the six corners of the universe and brings them back into the vessel. One of the little explanations of the Sephiroth says that, like the very highest circle on the Sephiroth, is Keter, which is crown, and then it goes out with two arms, and this is Aleph and Bet. No, Gimel and Bet. So it says the first three circles, when God poured out his being on creative being, that the these three, the Aleph, Bet, and Gimel, could contain that, but the others were shattered. So all these shattered pieces, shards, and sparks is our opportunity to bring repair. That's the way they use that tikkun, to gather these sparks back into a unified whole. What is it?
I think what you're saying is that, I don't like to use the terms, but since we're saying it, then I will. The male aspect is the linear, and the female is the feeling, ethereal part. One is not complete without the other. And so this vow kind of encircles it all and gives it perspective, and one without the other is lacking.
Yes.
And you can't have the whole sense of it by either the linear, this is the rule, you'll stay in the rule, and that's the end of it. But what about how I feel about it? Well, the linear says, forget how you feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's inappropriate, that's insufficient, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So the vow has to be, in my mind, from what you're trying to explain, is the completion involves both.
Peacemaker.
Yes.
No, I wouldn't say peacemaker. I'd say
complete.
Yeah, that's good.
A peacemaker could ignore and just say things. A completer adds, makes it whole.
Makes it
whole. Well, what is that factor that says it's greater than the whole is greater than the some two parts. So
maybe this will help, because I looked it up on the internet. It says it's a symbol of connection, portraying a bridge and structure. Did that help? And also, the world was completed in 6 days.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yes,
I've.
What comes to my mind too is the oneness of the marriage. The husband and the wife become one. Without each other, they're not complete.
Right.
Since spiritual things.
Yeah.
Not actually natural.
Yeah.
Well, and also, not to just keep that in the tangible of marriage, but each one of us has to be married to our males and females.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's the whole point. This is just a typology of a married man and woman. Chopra uses this scripture to talk about the vow. It's Numbers 5, 6, and 7. I've probably done better to... Numbers 5, verse 6, and 7. And the Lord said to Moses, say to the people of Israel, when a man or woman commits any of the sins that men commit by breaking faith with the Lord, and that person is guilty, he shall confess his sin which he has committed, and he shall make full restitution for his wrong, adding a fifth to it, and giving it to him to whom he did the wrong. But if the man has no kinsman to whom restitution may be made for the wrong, the restitution for wrong shall go to the Lord for the priest. Shall go to the Lord for the priest, in addition to the ram of atonement, with which atonement is made for him. And the reason he uses this is because Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, is called Vidui, V-I-D-U-I, containing a V. It means confession. And it was, my thought was, yes, I have to agree with that, because for just between me and Speed, we'll use that as an example. If I feel like he wrongs me and he comes and says, I'm sorry for that, and I can feel his sincerity, it's reassuring to me that he understands what he did and how I feel and has made that thing right. Well, that could go for, it's a crime in our legal system that there's really so little restitution made for the victim of the crime. If the police take goods, they usually keep the things. and the people don't ever get back to the property or anything. And it's just talking in really wide terms, but it just seems so solid to me. It brings atonement again, atonement. It attaches that past deed, like we talked about, to a future, a present improvement and a future better relationship. So I just thought, yeah, I'm all for that. There needs to be an attitude of confession in our hearts toward one another and toward the way we live our lives. Now, that's one of the dark shadows. Each one of these letters has a dark side. It talks about the shadows. I just didn't get into that. But that with this one, it can just get chronic, where you feel guilty all the time, and whatever restitution you make does not relieve you. Well, that's gotten into your psychological
personal guilt,
and it's become a weakness.
Such a need for being forgiven. Mm-hmm. That's what causes people to step up and say, "Hey, I did this," because of that need for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People cutting themselves in it, I was myself, and that's what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another example of how Bob is so full of life, because if, we carry that guilt from at least Adam, and, Adam represents whatever humanity was all the years before that to me. And so we have this inborn disconnect with the recognition of God's true nature of being a forgiving and loving and, yes, I forgive you, come back here thing. The vidu, which is confession, was said at the Feast of Atonement, Yom Kippur, and it was said on one's wedding day and on the deathbed. The white wedding garments that both the male and the female wore were worn to the synagogue every Yom Kippur. I love that. And after burial, so I'm just going, God, He just covers us so completely and makes us such a path to live in harmony and in connectedness. And we can do this within, of course, the white garment is the righteousness that God gives. But I have to say, that's a good demonstration, God, you set up for that people under the law at that time. One more I want to cover up quickly because it's out of order, but I woke up Friday morning, and as I rolled to get out of bed, I just heard God say, shin. And then yesterday it came back to me again, so I just want to do a little bit about that. Shin is next to the last letter. Its value is 300. It is pronounced, it has the sound of either S or SH. And it is contained in such words as the Hebrew Shemesh, which is sun, Shalavet, which is flame, Sharah, which is heat, Shaddai, which is the many-breasted female aspect of God, and Shalom, peace, wholeness, safety, completion, soundness, health, and integrity. Shema, or just the letter Shin, is carved or placed on the medusa in a Hebrew home, which is a little box right on the doorway that holds the Shema Israel prayer, which is, I'll read it if I can find where I put it. It's Deuteronomy 6 and 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your might. Is the Shema Israel, that is their anchoring prayer and verse. Shana is another Hebrew word. It starts with SH. It means change. It's seen in the Feast of Rosh Hashanah, which means head of the year. It's related to the root Shana, which means change. Shabbat is the Sabbath. In the studying, made a point of saying that each Shabbat is a punctuation of the progression of the year. It's that time, that day when we come calls her before the Shekinah glory, welcome her into our life, and experience just for the moment our enoughness, which is what Shekinah means. She means rest and enough. So that is that provision of the Shekinah glory of God. And when I read that, I thought of our group here, that indeed that's been that. Dad, I just wrote the note. That's been that to us here. It, no matter, for me, no matter what kind of shape I was in, when I come to church, I could either hear a word of correction that let me know where I stood and thus release it, or be reassured of God's love for that spirit that I feel. So, man, it's just so functional, so real. Let me read this. This is one of my favorite verses in this whole book. The function of Shin being fire, it's the fire mother. I didn't say that. Shin is the fire mother. That sounds like it could be harsh and hard, but Shin burns away superficialities and gets to the core of experience. And at the core of experience, when everything else is burned away by Shin's holy fire, dwells shalom. Good grief, I don't know what's wrong with me. Okay. And even in hard times, when debris and ashes cover that glory, there's that potential for Shin to burst into flame again. When I read that, I thought of an experience, something that my dad told me. They bought a big wooded property when Dad was... he was getting up in years when they bought that property. But anyway, they had to clear, it was 5 acres, did I say that? They had to clear a driveway and a place for the house. So there was either, I think there was just an indention there on the property fairly close to where the roadway was. And they just kept piling cut wood and lumber and stuff that they were using to build a house in that thing, kept burning it day by day. It was pretty well confined, and they went on at least a 10-day vacation, if not 2 weeks. And when they came back and started working again, Dad just kind of was going to remove some of the debris to start a new fire and a new junk pile. And that the fire was smoldering underneath that thing, ready to go. So that's what I thought of. There was a quote from a 13th century monk that says, "There is a place that does not belong to the yin and yang, to the coming and going, to the birth and death, and cycles of change." And that it's a place within that burns and is steady with a holy fire. Simcha is another word that contains the shin. It's not just a mere incidental in your spiritual quest. It is vital. Finding true joy is the hardest of all spiritual tasks. Even if you have to do something silly to make yourself feel happy, do that thing. And some other words that contain the S are Masaya, which means story, Shire means song, sok means laughter, and Shaddai again, enough. Chopra's take on this was that scripture that I read, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. The ultimate lesson of life is that God is one, we are one, everything is one, and love the Lord in that oneness with all your heart, soul, and resources. That's the 300. That's the point I was going to make. Shin is 300, and that spirit, soul, and body is such a work. One thing I didn't say, just really want to write in the output of Aleph, its sound is silent. I watched a short little YouTube lecture that Eckhart Tolle did. He came out on the stage, smiling and comfortable, just sauntered out, sat down, and just sat there. And he just looked around, and I could feel over that YouTube that whole audience just, you know, there was, I could feel a lot of things, a little tension and a little questioning. What's he doing? And come on, get on with it, you know, just a little restlessness. But just in moments, he settled right out. I mean, the whole audience settled out. And again, with Suzanne's story about David going to hear that soldier, she said, David said he walked out on the stage and just in his standing there, everybody in the audience was changed and brought into a receptive state. So that's the LE. Want to make that point?
I remember that happening. I think it was the last meeting of Rokas and last Thanksgiving. We were stepped in the sanctuary and a holy hush came upon all of us. And he just fell on his face, on his knees before the Lord. It was so beautiful. Wasn't it this year that happened?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah, you don't experience that often enough.
Mm-hmm. I think we're moving into it probably more in our personal time. In this, almost any time I'm doing a specific study, and I'm at least into it enough to know where I'm going with it. When I sit down, I just feel God go. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm done. Mm-hmm.